My guests today are Dan Barker, an atheist who, after 19 years of evangelical preaching, missionizing, evangelism, and Christian songwriting, threw out the bathwater and discovered there's no baby there. In his book, Losing Faith in Faith, he describes the intellectual and psychological struggle required to move from fundamentalism to free thought. I'm also speaking with Dr. Lena Farhat Holzman, who keeps up with current events and writes about them on her website, globalthink.net. She also has a couple of books out. I think that my goal is not to attempt to change anybody's mind about their personal faith, but merely to take a critical look at how religion can be used inappropriately, let's say as a tool, by those who seek greater power to encourage the citizenry to do this or to do that, to change their minds, to vote in a certain way, to believe certain things, to have certain beliefs, and to have certain values. So please stay tuned, and we'll continue to tease this issue apart on Values and Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom.
Are you living your dash? It's that little line between your date of birth and date of death that represents your life. Are you living your life by design or by default? Are you as effective as you'd like to be? Dash coaches uncover what you don't see so you can achieve that effectiveness. They empower people and organizations to optimize their dash. Get your free dash coaching session today. Call 516-677-9111 or visit dashlive.com.
Guys, confused in the area of dating and relationships? Please allow Doc Love to coach you. He's been featured in major media such as Time and Fox News for his ability to coach you with the fairer sex. Don't miss the Doc Love Show, Understanding Women for Men Only, each Sunday morning on World Talk Radio.
Listen, the world is talking. World Talk Radio.
Interested in advertising on any of our shows? Please click the advertise link on the homepage or send an email to ads@worldtalkradio.com. Or you can click on the sponsor this show link on any of the show pages.
Hi there. Welcome back. This is the second segment of the show about how religion affects society. And let me ask you, too. I'm pretty interested in how the leaders, the political leaders, are using religion for their purposes. And perhaps, Dan, you'd like to speak to the American political leaders, and perhaps Lena, you would like to speak to some of the leaders in Middle Eastern countries, and maybe we'll start with Lena. How do you think the civilizations, maybe civilization is the wrong word, the nations are dependent on religion? I guess in 99.9% of the time it's Islam. How are they dependent on Islam to retain their rule and keep the people in a certain position?
From the very beginning of history, where we had civilization at all, and this would mean concentrations of people in cities, religion and power always worked together. And religion validated the king, or validated the power. And the power source protected religion with military might. And they've always worked together. And throughout the centuries, we've seen this. The changes that have come since the Enlightenment in Europe. And the Reformation and then the Enlightenment, in which religion and governance were separated out from each other. It took a while for that to happen, but power is it's a very strong aphrodisiac, and people who can use it, especially using power to mold people to their purposes, and people who are frightened over things that are happening in their world rely on religion to give them answers. So it's a relationship that we've only recently, historically speaking, begun to break.
Dan, is this true of America as well?
Yes.
Yes, it was.
Of course. Jesus said, if Jesus ever existed, the New Testament quotes him as saying that those who are not sick don't need a doctor. It's only people who are sick who need a doctor. So religion is very effective at teaching people that they are sick, that there's something wrong with them. They're sinners, they're going to go to hell. And if you buy into that idea, then of course you want to go to heaven. And how can I get to heaven and avoid hell? And the key comes through my religion or my faith, and you can motivate people. The people who flew those planes into the World Trade Center believed that they were going to heaven with, mm-hmm. I don't know how many virgins they were going to have or whatever, but they believed that what they were doing was a good thing, and they were earning points with their God. So look at the power of this kind of a belief system.
Sure.
It's all unverifiable, it's irrational, it is counter-humanity, and yet if you can get people to accept this from childhood, you can motivate them to do all sorts of actually unethical, immoral, horrible actions in the name of God by turning good into bad and bad into good. So the problem is in education. As long as societies are still going to educate children that there is this transcendent world where there are demons and ghosts and angels and judgment day and all of that, well, then people are scared. Like Lena says, they're scared. Can I ask you, Jason, is Lena the person who was just in the news because her article was pulled? Was that you that we just read about?
Lena, did you hear that question?
What was that? I didn't hear.
Oh, okay. That wasn't you then. I read in the news recently that some scholar like you had an article printed that was just pulled because it was too critical of Islam. But in any event, you see the power of religion to censor speech, to censor thought. You know, when I was a fundamentalist, I was even afraid personally to myself to think questioning thoughts. And look at the power that religion has over the minds of human beings.
I want to know, how did you learn how to do that? How did you learn to switch from a belief system to critical thinking?
It was education. It didn't happen until my early 30s. Some kind of a hunger inside of me to learn more about what I was preaching. It just sort of woke up, and I, over 4 or 5 years, I just sort of fell in love, and I had this voracious appetite. I think the true liberal arts education that I should have had in my teens and early 20s, but denied myself because I went into the ministry, I think that caught up with me, and it exploded, and I started to read and gradually drifted across, and I realized, oh my God, what have I been believing all these years? And it was painful. It was horrible, and it happens to an awful lot of people, to a lot of them a lot younger than me. You know, why did I take so long? But in any event, the love for learning, the beauty of science, the allure of philosophy, the mm-hmm. respect for thinkers who were different from the prescribed list that I was being fed, I realized these aren't evil people, these are thinkers too. And so there's this world of learning out there that religion tends to squelch, and it can backfire on a person, and it backfired on me.
Do you think that if your education as a young person was more moderate, and if maybe instead of becoming a preacher you became a salesperson for rugs, do you think that maybe you would have not gone so far in the direction of challenging religion in an atheistic and free-thinking way?
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe in my own particular case, I'm doing a kind of reverse penance. You know, I'm trying to undo the damage that I happened to do as a minister. And I think you're right. Although I know a lot of atheists and agnostics who were always that way, who feel just as strongly about keeping state and church separate. So I think we all agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very an interesting point that you're raising here. The suicide bombers who attacked the United States, all of them had some kind of education, but I noticed that all of them had technical education. None of them had humanities. And I've been a professor of the humanities, thinking that this is the road toward critical thinking.
Yeah.
And the technical training that people get doesn't qualify them for thinking.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. They were obviously smart enough to know how to outwit the American authorities here and there and here and there.
Well, they were very smart. But the fact is that they did have something of an education, but it's the wrong kind. I certainly don't object to a technical education, but I would want everybody who's in it to have some exposure to philosophy and critical thinking.
Well, that raises
literature, hopefully.
That raises a question, and maybe this is kind of an academic point, but you know, it's worth thinking, and it's in the vein of something that Thomas Friedman would say. I'm sure you read about him, and he's for the listener who might not know, you know, he writes for the New York Times on the back page, and he's pretty educated, and he talks about societies in the Middle East and how, you know, it is curious that these men were not, you know, the men who crashed planes into the, you know, who had this this September 11th plan, they were not ignorant in certain ways. I mean, they knew how to fly planes, they knew how to get fake IDs, they knew how to do this and do that, but they had this, what I would consider to be like this like a prejudiced way of thinking, where they wouldn't challenge certain things. They used this dogmatic view of religion that they were taught to lead them to believe that,
and they were willing to believe things that are really silly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a shame, because you can do so much damage that way.
So it does raise the interesting point that we're talking about here, that if you're intelligent, and let's assume that they all have, you know, average IQs, and if you are educated, let's say as an engineer, you know, how is it that you can be so duped? It must have something to do with the society in which you live, and maybe some of the economic factors that allow people in power to use religion to manipulate you.
I think it calls for a different kind of thinking to master technological things than it does to do critical thinking on philosophical topics.
Well, I remember in my case, I was smart. You know, I was an A student. I was a, you know, bright kid and a good musician and pianist and all of that. And the things that I was good at, I was good at, but I figured that there were these other areas, for example, theology or politics, that other thinkers had already done the work on. You know what I mean? I passed it off to authority rather than my doing my own homework. And I think you can be trained in one field and realize that you have to trust authority in another field. So I just assumed that all these things that my preachers and my family and the ministers and the seminaries had been telling me, I just assumed that it was all backed up somewhere, you know, with facts and scholarship, and that, you know, why should I have to reinvent the wheel? I'll just take their word from it and go with it. So it was only when I started scratching beneath the surface that I realized how empty the bubble was. But also, you combine that with the fact that I did have a respect for my family. I loved my parents. I wanted to please them. I loved my community, my preachers, the church. I wanted to be a good boy. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to do the right thing. And so, of course, I just went with the flow on those things, and I trusted my minister, and I trusted the scholars.
Have you fallen out with them as a result of your change?
Some of them, yes, although my parents later rejected Christianity as well and became atheists, and one of my brothers. We have another brother who's still a born-again Christian, whom we call the white sheep of the family. And he's a really good guy. We all love each other in our family. But I've had some horrible falling outs. But I've also discovered that some of my Christian friends were still friends today. We realized that our friendship was based on a true peer admiration rather than belonging to the same nation or religion or club or whatever.
You are very lucky, because that does not always happen.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, let's just. Let's be clear. Well, let me ask you to be clear, perhaps Dan first. What do you think religion can do for a person? There must be many people out there who gain some benefit.
Religion has a very important civilizing effect. It always has had when it begins. Now, I think that we have to look at religion as an organic human institution rather than, say, you know, being certain that it comes directly from God. I look at it as a historian. It's an institution, and that when it begins with a spark of inspiration. It grows into maturity. The bean counters take over. It changes over time, and eventually it either dies or it has a renewal of new life. And this has been true for every great religion in the world. They've all had to go through this process. And when you look at Islam, the Prophet Muhammad had given five pillars of Islam that people needed to do if they were going to be a Muslim. Not one of those is a problem. None of them. He said to pray every day, to believe that there is only one God, to fast 1 month a year and give the food to the poor so that you know hunger, to travel once in your life and see what the world is like, which is what pilgrimage is, and to ransom widows and orphans. None of those rules would interfere with being a modern person in a modern state. But where you get the problem is Muslims have also decided that every word of the Quran was written by God, so they have to believe all of it, whether it's relevant to today or not. They have a collection of all the things that the Prophet Muhammad said and did in his life, and that becomes gospel. And then they have a code of law that was cooked up, and actually the door closed on it at the end of the 10th century. It cannot apply to the modern world. So they're really stuck, and they're stuck because they believe literally in their holy text. So anybody who is going to believe in holy text literally is running into problems, because the religion might have some very good ideas, but holy texts literally followed do not.
Dan, what's on your mind?
I think that's exactly right. There are hundreds of world religions. There are thousands of denominations in the world, and each one of them will tell you they are the right one, or at least they're the best one. But pick one. Just pick any one, and you've automatically got this kind of culturally sanctioned framework for understanding the world we live in. Doesn't matter which one you pick. If you live in a society and they give you this framework, this is a way to frame the reality, well, then you're fitting in with your culture and your friends and your family, and you're getting through life kind of all winking at each other, going, we know how to get through life. And the views of your religion can radically contradict the views of someone else. Doesn't matter. It's like a mnemonic or a teaching device for children as they're trying to grow up, to say, here's what we're going to do to pretend what the world is like. So religion does offer that kind of a benefit, although I have to say I'm surprised how many people live perfectly good lives, happy, productive, moral, generous lives without religion. I didn't know there were so many in the world. But if you do have a religion, there is something of a community benefit from it.
You've got it right there. That is the key, that religion provides community.
Yeah, as long as you're in the right community. If you take your religion...
It doesn't matter, but it provides community. You've got people who are there if you get sick, who'll take care of you, who'll bring food when you have a new baby. You know, you've got the kind of community solidarity that those of us who are not affiliated, and that's you and me, we don't have this. We have to make our own.
Well, some of us do. Here in Madison, you know, when my wife almost died from eclampsia when our daughter was born, a whole bunch of atheist and agnostic community members came in.
That is very good news, because I hadn't seen that before.
And just as a matter of course, most of our relatives are non-religious, so we had this feeling of family community that it wasn't pro or con religion, it was just the world we live in. But I think you're right, in most parts of the world...
You need community.
Yeah, and you can find that through a political cause or a social issue or some other. You can find it through stamp collecting or what, you know. You can find a sense of community anywhere, but religion tends to have this overarching, and it also makes the claim that it gives you a source of moral values.
That's right. It's one of the more comforting types of community for people who are looking for answers.
Yeah,
Lena, are you also convinced, as Dan seems to be, that a person can be a good person, can have morality in their life and have values that are good ones without adhering to a particular religion?
Oh, I do indeed. Oh, I think that that is certainly true, and we have been finding that out for the past 400 years of Western experience, of starting with the Reformation and then the Enlightenment. We've been discovering that human beings really are able to be very decent people without having to always ask, you know, am I doing the thing that that God likes, you know, this external God? There's a built-in moral consciousness, and that idea goes all the way back to Socrates. He had it, but he got in trouble with his community because they said he was an atheist, he was irreligious.
Yeah, and about Socrates, who I also find fascinating, I would like to note, right before we go to commercial here, that not only... You know, he was in trouble with his community, but it's not like everybody in the community clearly wanted to censure him. I think it had so much to do with the people in power and how he was interrupting their, what's a good way to say it?
He was corrupting the youth.
Yeah, corrupting the youth. And I think the way that looked in reality was that, you know, the youth would come home at night or whatever after hearing something that Socrates said, and they would say to their father, hey, you know, maybe you shouldn't be doing that. Maybe you shouldn't have the power you have. Maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you shouldn't. And they began to talk at the meetings and say, you know, this guy Socrates, he's really causing trouble for me in my home. He's insulting us in public, and it's not good for our decaying civilization to have him like a horsefly on our backs.
This is the same situation that you have in the Muslim world now, where people are moving out of villages into the cities, and the young people are going to school, and they come home and they argue with the traditional biases of their families, and this is not tolerated well.
That's quite interesting. Let's go to commercial, and when we get back, if you'll still give me 15 minutes, I'll appreciate that.
Sure.
On values and ethics from Living Room to Boardroom, brought to you by World Talk Radio.